Hello, students, and welcome back to another Lore of the Iron Kingdoms with me, Professor Caster. Today, we're actually going to be sticking with our shorter versions of these. We're still going to group a couple different Warcasters in, but today we're going over the High Allegiant Aman Ad-Raza, the High Exemplar Serenia, and then Thyra, the Flame of Sorrow. And then next, or the following time, we're going to finish up the last two of these, including a Warcaster who's not tournament legal anymore. So we'll be reading about him, but we'll surprise you next week when we go over him. But without further ado, thank you guys so much for watching this. If you can, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know how you're enjoying this, share it with your friends and fellow gamers alike. Thank you again, Privateer Press, for letting us read your fantastic lore. And let's begin. High Allegiant Aman Ad-Raza. Aman Ad-Raza learned to survive on the fringes of the Protectorate Society, his nomadic Idrian family constantly on the move in a futile attempt to escape Menite rule. If not for the hardship he endured early in life, it is possible the young man would never have found the strength to walk his true path in the service of the Lawgiver. He first discovered the word of the true law while infiltrating a Protectorate settlement in search of food, where he overheard the sermons of Menite monks. Moved by the power of their words and heeding the acclamation in his soul, Aman entrusted his destiny to the will of Meneth from that fateful day forward. He soon found his true calling in the teachings and philosophy of the Order of the Fist. Aman's combination of unshakable faith and unparalleled determination made him a prodigy among the Order. He honed his body to achieve feats beyond the reach of most of his brothers. His flesh shattered blades as if they were made of stone. His graceful movements flowed like wind-blown sand, and his strength focused on unrelenting intensity of the desert sun. Aman's ascension to the rank of High Allegiant resonated with the will of a divinely guided hand. For the mere years, he began counseling students beside the very same masters who had instructed him. It was the great Hierarch Garrick Voyle who took note of this young Allegiant. Seeing the potential within Aman, Voyle pushed the monk to his limits to test every talent, ability, and aspect of the young man's spirit. Surpassing the Hierarch's expectations, Aman triumphed over each trial, including conquering the cortex of a warjack with his mind. Using every ounce of his superior mental discipline and control, Aman projected his will onto the mind of the machine, confirming the Hierarch's suspicions. Aman was a born warcaster. Voyle declared, "One who controls the titans of war should be instructed in Meneth's will, not cloistered in the temple tutoring monks and breaking stones." Soon Aman was displaying his skills on the field, leading his battle group to war. As his legend grew among the Idrian tribes, more of his people began to convert, and in time Aman earned the esteemed rank of High Allegiant. Aman wears little armor in battle, instead relying on the monastic conditioning to shrug off blows that would fell lesser men, while maintaining a calm that eludes description. Focusing on the holy clarity of his training, Aman's unstoppable attacks are charged with the very fury of his faith. And yeah, I feel like any time you see a very muscled up man running onto the battlefield without any armor or, you know, any weapons, you know, at least, you know, he actually does carry weapons, but seeing a man run onto the armor without any steam-powered armor is kind of insane. Especially noting that, you know, every warcaster is very, very used to wearing their armor because, you know, it protects us from, you know, random shots. But this man's faith and training, I imagine, makes his skin even tougher than most. So, yeah, he would be a heck of a guy to try to go up against in battle. And not to mention that he is a martial paragon, which means he has a crazy high defense. So even landing a blow would be kind of difficult on this man. So, but let's read his Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes. See if there is any. There might not be. There may be. He is kind of an old warcaster in the lore. So we will see what we got. Alrighty, and as always, let's start with his stat line to see what we have here. His speed is 6. His magic is still a 6. His mat is still a 7. So he's a little bit better than a melee warcaster. His defense is a staggering 16, which makes him more dodgy than some elves. His armor is only a 14 because, well, one, he's not really wearing armor, so he really does rely on that defense to keep him out of the limelight, if you will. Although blast damage in Mark IV is still a thing, so if you have somebody with a heavy blast damage on there, you could do some damage to him, unless, of course, he has an ability to make that a little bit more difficult as well. His control range is still a 6. His special abilities that he has, he still has breakthrough, so he doesn't get he can run past people without having to lose his combat action. He has tough, which makes sense since, you know, his skin has been acclimated by both training and the fact that he lives in a desert. And then he has Pathfinder, which also makes sense since he is very mobile in his own right. His other more interesting special abilities are he has Field Marshal Unstoppable. So he gives all of his Warjacks Unstoppable so they can all run past people without having to lose their combat action. And then he has Steady so he can't be knocked down. So that is fantastic, especially mixed with his tough. So that means that he has super tough minus the dice roll. Looks like his original guys that he had was he had parry, which Unstoppable took over for. He had Pathfinder, which is good. And he still has tough, so that's good. His Field Marshal is still the same. He used to have a thing called Preternatural Reflexes. This has been removed, so we'll read what this guy used to do and see if anything helps with that. He used to have a move called Preternatural Reflexes, which did not allow him to be attacked by combined range or combined melee attacks, which are kind of cool. He used to also not be able to gain a backstrike bonus on this model as well. And in Mark IV, there is no backstrike bonus because backstrikes don't exist anymore. Then he used to have resourcefulness, which allowed him to upkeep spells without having to spend focus if they were on his battle group, which was awesome, but I guess they took away that as well. Maybe it's kind of narrowing him down a little bit. And then he still has steady, so at least he still has a pretty decent chunk. I think he only lost 2 of his special abilities, so not the worst thing to have for a Warcaster to lose in the Mark IV. His weapon is still a Mat 7 Range 2 POW 14. It is still a magical chain weapon, so he still has his ability to ignore shields when he's swinging with this thing. And it still has, well, they changed trip for critical knockdown. So trip, if this attack hits, the target model becomes knocked down. Now they turned it into critical effect. Kind of nerfed that a little bit, unfortunately. But that does happen. Maybe it's a balance situation. I don't know. I'm not the rules maker on this one. And then his feet. Let's see if his feet change at all. His feet is still called Union. And it doesn't look like it changed, but it is a very interesting feat compared to some other feats. For each focus point, Amon spends this activation. Allocate one focus point to a Warjack in his battle group that was in his control range when he spent the focus. So I'm going to make the assumption that is per focus. So he spends 3 focus, he allocates 3 focus to Warjacks in his battle group. Which means with this activation, you kind of want him to go first because then he can cast a bunch of spells, load up all of his Warjacks, and then they can go do some mayhem on their own. So, yeah, that is a pretty nice feat, especially if you have a lot of cheap spells and you can keep him going a lot. But let's go over his spell list and see what he has, if anything changed, if anything didn't. We'll find out. All right, so he still has Convection. All right, it is a cost 2, range 10, POW 12, offensive yes. When Convection destroys a living enemy model, you can give 1 focus point to a Warjack in the Spellcaster's battle group that is in his control range. That has not changed. That is still the same. He has Flashing Blade. The Spellcaster immediately makes 1 basic attack with 1 of his melee weapons against each model in his line of sight that is in the weapon's melee range, and that costs 1, so... And that can be done multiple times. So if you're going into a heavy armored unit or heavy armored group, you can just keep spending 1 focus to make free attacks against everybody in your range. And his range is a 2, so because he has that chain weapon. So that is kind of awesome. That is still the same as his original. He has Fortify. Target model in the Spellcaster battle group gains +2 arm. This model and any friendly models based to base with it cannot become knocked down or pushed or moved by a slam. And that is exactly the same as it was its original, and it's still an upkeep, and it still costs 2. Then he has mobility, which makes sense for this type of caster. Models in the Spellcaster's battle group currently in his control range gain +2 speed and Pathfinder for one turn. And this costs 3, and it's everybody in his control group. So, yeah, that is well worth it to get your guys way up in there, way up on the enemy's toes. And for the enemies having to go up against this guy, that is a terrifying realization that their warjacks are way faster than you thought. And then he has one of my least favorite abilities, least favorite spells called Synergy. While in the spellcaster's control range, models in this model's battle group gain a +1 cumulative bonus on melee attacks and melee damage rolls for each other model in the battle group that hit an enemy with a melee attack this turn while in the spellcaster's control range. And it goes all the way up to a bonus that cannot exceed a +3 to both attacks and damage rolls in melee. Which, I don't know if you know this, but the ability to keep hitting more and more accurate and harder as it goes around is kind of awful. And if you just have 2 guys that make an attack, and then you have four other warjacks in your battle group, like, you give them a cumulative +3, which is insane. And especially since this guy, you know, is very, very melee sensed. So, and it just says models in the battle group. So this guy could eventually actually just give himself a +3, +3, which, let's see what that gets him up to. A +3, +3 on his weapon gets him up to a mat 10 and a pow 17 with critical knockdown and chain weapon to ignore shields. So yeah, it could make this particular warcaster just awful. Cause it doesn't say cohort models. It says models in battle group. So yeah. But yeah, it does not look like he has lost any of his spells. Looks like the only thing that got nerfed was those two preternatural reflexes and resourcefulness, and his weapon being nerfed down a little bit. But as far as a danger on the field, he is definitely dangerous, and he is definitely hard to hit. I recommend trying to hit him with as many AoE misses as you can, because at a arm 14, it's not the worst, although he can't be knocked down. So you still have to deal with this tough, even if you do get him down to that level of damage. But yeah, he is definitely a pretty decent melee warcaster. And if you can get him melee, you increase his livelihood from AoEs up to 20. So, or up to being shot to up to 20. So yeah, might as well get him into combat as quick as you can. So yeah, very dangerous. The insane shirtless man on the battlefield who's controlling a bunch of warjacks. Terrifying. But let's move on. Alrighty, and the next warcaster we're going over is High Exemplar Serenia. And not very much is known about her, since she is a relatively a newer caster in this whole aspect, or at least what we have in the archives. We do have some clues that she might be the second warcaster, well, the second known warcaster of the Protectorate of Meenith, who is of Idrian descent. And like Aemon, the Idrians were a nomadic group of desert dwellers that the Protectorate have, well, given the faith of Meenith to. So take that as you will. But let's read what little information we have from the archives here. Thank you again, War Machine University, for having everything in such a nice, tidy little factoids here. But High Exemplar Serenia is a cunning battlefield commander and skilled swordswoman who rouses her fellow exemplar to feats of excellence. A luminary member of the Exemplar Order, she excels in defensive tactical strategies, coordinating the efforts of the knights under her command while inspiring them with the depth of her personal faith. Because of her diligence and peerless conviction to her duties, some whisper that she fights as if Meenith's eyes were upon her. And I imagine the higher-ups are all very excited to see how far she is extended, or she will be pushed up, especially since Aemon is such a known warcaster in the Order. Other Idrians are probably seen as somebody who almost have to prove themselves up to Aemon's high esteem. But let's read over her a Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes, see if she's got anything. And again, most likely not, since she is a relatively a new warcaster, and I believe she came with the CID that they whipped out towards the end of Mark 3. But let's go over, we'll start with her stats as always. Speed 5, she's not super quick. Her magic attack is 6, her mat is 8, so she's definitely a melee caster, which would make sense since she is an exemplar. Defense 15, arm 16. Arc is 6, and control range is 12. And her abilities that she has is battle plans, which battle plans are always very exciting because they're like little mini feats that you can just toss around. And when we say mini, I don't know, I almost consider these like spells, but you know, that might be my own personal opinion on that one. But the battle plans that she still has is a desperate mission. So target friendly faction warrior models. If they're in range, that gains the last word. And desperate mission lasts for one round. When a model with the last word is disabled by an enemy attack, it can immediately advance up to 3 inches and make one basic attack before, well, being disabled. So that is a very useful move, especially on exemplars who, you know, I believe most of them have weapon master. We'll get to that whenever we start going into the units and the armies. But yeah, so that would be a very useful thing. And again, she is a exemplar warcaster, so that's probably why we have that one. Then we have the fight to the last on her Mark IV. Target friendly faction warrior models / unit, and the units gain tough. So that's what we need. Already heavy armored dudes gaining tough, so they're even harder to kill. Then her last one we have right here is special orders. Target friendly faction models or warrior models. If the model is in range, it gains reposition 3. We all know what reposition is. And in case you don't, we will read it right now. At the end of a model / unit with reposition 3 inches activation, in which it did not run or fail a charge, it can advance up to 3 inches, then its activation ends. And being able to move up to 3 inches now without the worry about getting hit when you move allows you to make your guys way more mobile without the side effects. So that's always nice. The only thing that changed looks like here on the battle plans was the wording, because I guess fight to the last replaced heroic call, which was another one that only affected exemplar warrior models. So this new one affects all friendly faction warrior models and not just exemplar. So that actually makes sense. And then her second ability on here is Righteous Vengeance. Which is basically the same as it was in her previous edition. If one or more friendly faction warrior models were destroyed or removed from play by enemy attacks while within 5 of this model during your maintenance phase, this model can advance up to 3 and make a basic attack. And with her weapons, because she is an exemplar, she carries a relic blade, and she is, well, very proficient with it at a mat of 8, a range of 1, and a POW of 11, but she is a weapon master, and that thing is magical. So it will do some damage because her base is 3 damage die worth of damage. And at a mat 8, you're not missing very much. So yeah, she's very dangerous in melee. Although with only a 1-inch melee range, she really has to get in there, but her armor and defense will definitely carry her forward. Her feat is Vigilance of the Faithful. While in Serena's control range, friendly faction models gain +2 defense. When one or more friendly faction models are destroyed or removed from play by an enemy attack while in Serena's control range, immediately after the attack is resolved, one friendly faction warrior model in Serena's control range can advance up to 3. A model can only move once per turn as a result of Vigilance of the Faithful, and then it lasts for one round. So that is pretty much exactly the same as her original. They gain a +2 defense, and then anytime somebody's killed, a friendly faction model in her control range can move up to 3 inches. So if you're losing a lot of people, you're moving a lot of people. So that's basically what that is. That's a Gibson very mobile, and if you're running for full exemplar army, it is a very useful battle strategy and very good feat. Let's go over her spells. She has a dash. Dash really hasn't changed all that much. The spellcaster and friendly faction warrior models activating in her control range gain +1 speed. So that is great. They used to gain parry as well, but since we don't have to worry about parry anymore, because, well, the whole attack opportunities when you move out of people's melee range, it changed up a bunch of those rules. So it is just a base level 1 speed onto that. Her next spell is Hexblast, same as her original. Enemy upkeep spells and animize on the model / unit directly hit by Hexblast immediately expire. This is a splash or an AoE damage, so it is a range 10, POW 13, 8, and an AoE of 2. So you might be able to catch a couple different models / units if you're really good at aiming. So her next spell is Inviolable Resolve. Well, I'll just say Inviolable Resolve. Target friendly faction model / unit gains +2 arm and cannot be knocked down or pushed by a or moved by a push or a slam. This is upkeepable, so you can make your guys a lot more hardy. And great for exemplars, great for anybody that has a shield. And it is friendly faction model, so you can even toss that on 2 warjacks if you wanted to. Her next one is Positive Charge. Target friendly faction cohort model gains +2 to melee attack and +2 to melee damage rolls. And while within 3 inches of the affected cohort model, other friendly faction models gain a +2 on melee attacks and +2 on damage rolls. So that's basically giving everybody around it almost, what, gang? I think that's what the normal ability's called. So not only does that model get a +2 to melee attack and melee damage rolls, everything within 2 inches of it also gains a +2 attack and +2 damage rolls. So you want to keep them clustered with that particular spell. Very useful. However, it is not an upkeepable spell. You have to cast it every turn because it's very, very powerful. And her last spell that she still has is a rock wall. So you place a wall template anywhere completely within her control range. And it has to make sure it does not touch a model's base, an obstruction or obstacle. And then at last, as long as you don't take it out, and it provides cover. So a very useful if you need to block charge lanes or protect your warcaster or, you know, anybody you want. Because being able to pop up a random wall to give people cover with a cost of 2 and you can just keep it there as long as you need, always a very useful to keep your guys alive. So, yeah, she is definitely a melee caster. Definitely wants to make all of her friends and fellow exemplars also very melee-esque casters, and she's very protective. So protective and throws out damage, and that's it. She doesn't ask much, doesn't need much, but she is a very, very solid warcaster to take. I just wish we had a little bit more lore on her, at least in the written lores. I'm looking through the archives here, and I really do not have all that much about her, so just have hearsay knowledge and the couple scripts we get from the archives. So, but let's move on to our final warcaster we're going to be discussing today. Thyra, the Flame of Sorrow. Tragedy grants strength and conviction to the survivors. Few have learned this bitter lesson as well as Thyra, called the Flame of Sorrow, among the sisterhood united by loss. She epitomizes the strength bestowed on those who have lost everything. Thyra has become a living weapon of the Minite cause. She moves with the surety of purpose and the precision of her blade strike, sharpened by focus of mind, repressing inner turmoil. She offers Minite sacrifice and blood and those deserving vengeance. Try as she might to banish the memories, Thyra cannot stop revisiting the bloody battles that destroyed her village and killed her family. Their deaths were senseless. The community fell prey to a war simply for living in the proximity of a sizable protectorate garrison. Signarn nobles decided those Minite soldiers were situated too close to the Black River and hired several disreputable mercenary companies to assist the soldiers in Eastwall in attacking the garrison. Thyra's village priest escorted all able-bodied adults to rally to assist. Seeing militia at their flanks, incensed and bloody-minded mercenaries who retaliated with brutal counterattack. When the militia retreated, the mercenaries followed, killing anyone who stood in their way. Thyra was among the armed defenders in the streets and saw a barrage of indiscriminate mercenary rifle fire shred through her house. Everyone Thyra held dear died on that day. It was the sight of her own child bleeding to death and the ruins of her home that broke her mind and changed her utterly. Thyra's powers awoke, and what she sees as nothing less than a direct blessing of Minith in answer to her anguish and prayers of vengeance. In mindless fury, she set upon those who had killed her family. Though having no formal training in their use, she wielded her blades so fluidly they seemed as an extension of her body. She became the incarnation of retribution as she leapt from the shadows to strike down every soldier in reach. Her warcaster potential had awoken without her realizing it. Others among the village survivors followed her lead and zealously fought to drive away the Signarin mercenaries, who tried to retreat but were hunted down like rabid dogs. Driven by the certainty of Minut's approval, she devoted herself to killing heathens in the god's name. Many felt drawn to her cause, and from the volunteers she assembled a band of zealots, many of whom had suffered similar losses. These guerrilla fighters had no sanctions from the Minite Temple and allowed Thyra across the river in daring night raids and strikes against isolated Signarin outposts and towns. This might have gone on if a more moderate priest had not come to her demanding she ends the raids, concerned about retaliation. Enraged at his attempt to halt what she saw as divine mandate, Thyra struck the priest. Though he lived, this assault brought Thyra to the attention of the Knights Exemplar and soon resulted in her arrest, incarceration, and pending execution. Such would have been her fate if not for the intervention of Fiora, Priestess of the Flame. Fiora confronted the imprisoned zealot leader, in part to test the strength of the woman's resolve. Despite her sentence, Thyra argued she was chosen for this cause and could not surrender her purpose. Fiora was able to sense the Warcaster power flowing through the passionate warrior and ascertained her potential usefulness. The Priestess of the Flame used her authority to set the woman free, telling Thyra she could have her vengeance as long as her anger was properly channeled. Thyra would become leader of the Daughters of the Flame, her bloody cause sanctioned as part of the Protectorate's crusade. So, yeah. Well, I can see why Fiora enjoyed this woman's company, because Fiora is also a woman of sheer determination and willpower as well. And, well, having a Warcaster in the Sisters of the Flame, I believe it was, or Daughters of the Flame, sorry, would make them even more terrifying. So she's basically like a retribution or a mage hunter elf a little bit, but she likes using fire a lot more than they do, as Minites seem to like to do. But yeah, she's uber quick, very dangerous. She pops in and out where she needs to go and, you know, slice and dice like a meat grinder. So, but let's read her a Mark 3 to Mark 4 changes and see if she's gotten better, see if she's gotten worse, see if she's gotten faster, slower, and the like. And of course, we will start with her stat line because it is uber dodgy. We have a speed of 7, a mat of 8, a defense of a staggering 17, which makes her more dodgy than a lot of elves. Her arm is 14, so it's not nearly as heavy. I imagine that's because she is uber quick and needs to be uber quick. She has an arc of 6, a control range of 12. She has a breakthrough, or unstoppable, I believe that's what it's called, which is basically breakthrough. So she can run past people without them stopping her. She has stealth as well, because why wouldn't she have stealth being a daughter of the Flame, or at least part of that group? And then she has Pathfinder as well, so she is not stopped by rough terrain and or obstacles. So, but let's read over some of her more interesting abilities as well. The breakthrough unstoppable, that takes up for parry, because, well, we have to have it, especially because she has a additional skill called Acrobat, which is uber dangerous because she is definitely an assassin caster and she wants to get in there and kill a lot of things. But Acrobat, this model can advance through other models as if it has enough, or if it has enough movement to get completely past their bases. And this model ignores intervening models when declaring a charge. So if she sees somebody hiding behind somebody else, she can run right through them as if they're not there, or charge right through them as if they're not there. And with a speed of 7 plus 3 for charge, she has a 10-inch threat plus her 1-inch weapons. I believe they're 1-inch. Let me double-check that. Yeah, they are 1-inch. I figured because, you know, she carries these little knives, so that does, well, they're a lot longer than knives, but you get my drift. So she's got that. Then she has her elite cadre, Daughters of the Flame. Friendly Daughters of the Flame models gain Vengeance. During your maintenance phase, if one or more models in the unit with Vengeance were damaged by an enemy attack during the last round, each model in the unit can advance up to 3 and make one basic melee attack. So that's very dangerous. Then she has a Gates of Death. At the end of your turn, place this model anywhere within 5 inches of its current location. So it's kind of like reposition, but it's a place. So they're just, she's just disappearing and popping up in another place. little different on that movement, but that's how it is. And then she has Overtake. So when this model destroys one or more enemy models with the basic melee attack, during its combat action, after the attack is resolved, it can immediately advance up to 1 inch. And remember, that's during its basic melee attack. So if they're bot melee attacks, that doesn't work like that. So she can basically only move to how many basic melee attacks she has, which I believe she has two. Yeah, she has two. So she can move up to 2 inches while she's killing a bunch of people. One of the things that was taken away in the Mark IV was a blend-in. So in Mark III, she had blend-in Daughters of the Flame. This model cannot be targeted by attacks, charges, or slam power attacks while there is one or more other friendly Daughters of the Flame models within 3 inches of it. So that's been removed. Kind of a weird one, but it has been taken out. And then her other one that was removed was Synergistic Magic. This model can gain power tokens. When a model destroys an enemy with an attack, this model gains power tokens. The model can spend power tokens to upkeep and cast upkeep spells as if they were Focus or Fury. So that's been removed. I imagine that was more for a balance situation, because giving her that, it's kind of weird, because I know a lot of people also use that for Soul Collection as well. So, but maybe they're trying to make it souls, but maybe less gritty. I don't know. That's what it is. But let's read over her weapons real quick. She has her Grief and Lament weapons, which are both the same. They're just, yeah. So they are a mat of 8, because she's real good at melee. Range of 1, power 11, and she's a weapon master on both of them, and they are both magical, so she can take on ghosts and goblins. So that is awesome, especially for a little assassin as she is. Having weapon master on an assassin's blade is even more terrifying. And then her feat is Shadows of the Urcane. Immediately place Thyra anywhere completely within 2 of her current location. When a friendly faction model activates in Thyra's control range at the start of its activation, you can place it anywhere completely within 2 of its current location. Then Shadows of Urcane lasts for 1 round. So it's basically just being able to move everybody 2 inches out of its current location and pop it up somewhere else. So if you're trying to get away from somebody, trying to get out of melee ranges or whatever, or just trying to get into a better position, maybe you just want to be in a better position, you can hit more stuff. That's what it is. Basically the exact same as her previous feat in Mark III. So we got that going. But let's read over her uber dangerous spells. It doesn't look like we have any major changes on these. We still have Carnage, so friendly faction models gain +2 to melee attack rolls against models in the spellcaster's control range, and this affects everybody, so very useful on that. Makes them a lot more deadly, especially since she's also affected by her spell, getting her up to a mat of 10. Morrow be blessed. But yeah, that is insanely high. That's a little bit higher than the Butcher, as we're all aware. So can you imagine the Butcher with a 10-inch or a 10-mat? Anyway, her next spell is Occultation. Yeah, let's say it, Occultation. Target friendly faction model / unit gains stealth. So being able to hand out stealth, very useful, especially for these fast guys. And she already has stealth herself, so she doesn't need it. But yeah, she can make other people in her army very stealthy. And that is friendly faction, so she can even give that to her warjacks if she so desires. Then we have Silence of Death. Target friendly faction model / unit gains +2 to its melee attack damage rolls and takedown. Models disabled by a melee attack made with a model who has takedown cannot make tough rolls. So, and then they're removed from play too, so they don't even have a body as well. So that's the same as it was before. Takedown is a very useful tool if you're trying to go up against people that have a lot of tough, or people that like to collect bodies and souls, which we all know many factions like to collect both bodies and or souls. Her last spell that she still has is a Stranglehold. A model damaged by Stranglehold forfeits either its normal movement or its combat action during its next activation as the controller chooses. So you can really jack up a warjack with that ability and, you know, kind of hold him in his place. However, it does have a power 13, so if you're trying to damage a warjack, you're probably going to have to boost, unless it's a very low armor warjack, because it does have to damage. So that is that But as far as she goes, she is definitely an assassin caster. Is she a caster you want to get in a melee and sustain melee? No, absolutely not. She's a caster who wants to charge through the enemy front lines, go after their caster directly, take him out with little to no, you know, fanfare, and then move her units to the next target as quickly as possible. And especially since she does have Elite Cadre, Daughters of the Flame, might as well add a couple units of them in with her as well, because she makes them faster. And yeah, it's always very dangerous to have a full assassin force of the Protectorate going, so terrifying. But that is all we are going to discuss today. If you're enjoying this or still here, please like, subscribe, let me know what you think, let me know if you've ever used any of these warcasters in battle or had to go up against any of these warcasters in battle. Your stories keep this channel rolling. And as always, thank you, Privateer Press, for letting us read your fantastic lore. And as always, class dismissed.